Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome back for another night in the Passion Pit. Now we roam the world, and there is a glorious world just inches away from some of the finest Broadway theaters along Manhattan. That features amazing voices, presented unique renditions of Broadway show tunes, pop favorites, and the venerable American Songbook. Willkommen to Cabaret. Clubs like Don't Tell Mama and the Duplex supply a warm atmosphere, a few cocktails, and a rousing night of music. Sitting next to me is one of those cabaret artists, Mary Elizabeth Macari. She joined that world as Reverend Mary. Here she has enthralled audiences in two ways: as the leader of Granny's Bloomers, BLU-MERS. Get the play on words? She has unearthed and presented new versions of some of the raciest tunes made famous by female singers at the top of the last century. The clever double entendres we use to dodge censors. Some of those tunes have never been heard in public, and others not for nearly 100 years. She is also the Lady in Black, where she shares a deeply moving narrative of a woman's journey in finding her true self. Doug DeVita of Cabaret Hotspot wrote, "And as good as an actress as she is, it was her voice which shot the show up to the heavens. Every single note perfectly placed and produced. Her vocals poured out of her like the silkiest, best bourbon, intoxicating, leaving one feeling the warm glow of a night well spent with a good friend and looking forward to another generous pour." Jeez, I can't wait to interview Doug. Mary, now you're going to be the interviewee. Tell us about your foray into cabaret.
Wow, that was nice. Wasn't that nice of Doug?
Oh my God, he's so terrific. Oh,
that was really lovely, and I'm glad he felt that way. And he also liked Granny's Bloomers as well, which is great. So what do you want to know?
Well, tell me, you have a very diverse theatrical career and a very diverse singing career. So tell us how we wended that road down into the mic and the spotlight of cabaret.
When did it start?
Yeah.
About 2.5 years ago, I had an idea. I was thinking a lot about these vintage dirty blues I had found in one album. And I was like, wow, nobody sings these. And I researched them and I thought they should be heard. You know, this would be cool to do. Why not put together a show and get some real musicians that want to do this kind of work and this funky kind of funny stuff and just get it on up there? And after doing some research about how to do it, where to do it, I decided upon the Duplex at first to see where I would want to put it up. And I liked the idea of it being in a nightclub because these songs were done in nightclubs and in bars,
right,
and in
sure.
gin joints.
Gin mills.
Right. So instead of buying a gin joint, which of course I can't, or maybe I could, but I said, let me try it out in the Duplex. And so we did. We did it in the Duplex in three incarnations, three different times. We did something called the Meat Show to start with. It was every song written about meat, meaning the male organ. So there was that. And then we did...
It's amazing what the word wiener sounded like in 1920.
300 different ways to say the word wiener.
Yes.
Then we did a show called Down in the Alley. And that was about anal sex, part of my frankness, but that's what it was about. And all the songs were about that.
This episode may not be suitable for all children.
True. These songs are not necessary, but actually the funny thing is the songs would be suitable because they wouldn't say the words anal sex or male member. They'd say meat or wieners or hot dogs, or they'd say down in my alley or things like that. And then the third show...
That's how they got away with it with the censors, yes? The censors thought they were talking about lunch.
No, there wasn't really no need for censors. Actually, that was incorrect what you said. There were no censors before the 1950s. So anything that was recorded and distributed and what people were singing was never looked at until the 1950s. Then suddenly in the 1950s, when there was such an outpouring of rock and roll was the thing that alerted the censors to music in general and said, wait a minute, that's dirty stuff.
But there was social mores. They couldn't very well say, you know, I'm out with my man and he screwed me last night.
They could, and as a matter of fact, they did. There were,
wow,
songs, there were songs that were very dirty and very blatant. I just don't happen to sing those songs.
Oh, wow.
There are songs that are about, you know, all kinds of things that are just flat right there on the table. You know, there's clean out stuff that's very similar to what you hear today in rap or R&B, so or even rock. So now those songs I didn't choose to do. I like the poetry of the songs that have the double entendre. I think that's funnier and better. And I think that to me, you can make it more of a vaudeville type show if you keep it kind of cute. and Not So Filthy. So that's why I chose those songs. And then we did a song, kind of a traveling version of the show, which I just called Wet It. And that was just different bars and different clubs all around the city. So we did that show for 2 years straight, the Dirty Sex Show. And now we're branching into something else. We're doing a marijuana show now. We're doing songs about cannabis.
Yay!
When it was legal and when it was fun to do and people liked it and were experimenting with it a lot. And it had millions of different names and so many songs written about it. And that's a show called I'm So High. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be hopefully on April 20th in 2019, ready to go.
Now, you create quite the atmosphere with this. You don't just stand up there and sing. You're decked out in costume and your band is all dressed like musicians of that era. You have washboards and kazoos and all sorts of other fascinating pieces that go with it. You create a whole atmosphere.
Right. We've even did burlesque. We actually brought burlesque dancers and strippers of sorts to strip to this music. Nothing, modern, but trying to be as though they were strippers of that era as well. So we gave them a challenge, some newer burlesque dancers who wanted to try out this genre, and we did that as well.
So you're bringing the back room back for us to see.
Well, we actually did it in back rooms of bars.
Well, there you go. Now, quite in the opposite direction, you created The Lady in Black, and that became quite a watershed moment for you, if you'd like to share that experience.
Sure. Well, I was thinking that I've done so much body stuff, and I would like to, I don't just sing body blues. I'm a trained opera singer, and for a long time, I pursued and capitalized upon the American songbook work and also jazz, particularly jazz and blues. So I wanted to do a show where I could focus on those things and sing better than I get to sing in the dirty blues stuff. Dirty blues stuff, it doesn't allow for much vocal room. But jazz and blues, of course, it leaves you lots of room to be an interpreter and the vocalist.
Right.
So I thought, okay, let's go the opposite direction from all the silly stuff and get really serious. And that's why I called it The Lady in Black. And so what I did was card out my diaries from my preteen years all the way up until about when I was 35 years old. And I'm older than that, so whatever.
Just a little.
And read it on stage and explain to my audience what was going on in my life at that time and used songs to express the pathos of that time. While I was up on stage, believe it or not, in the midst of these things happen, our job as performers is to enlighten our audience and to get them to feel stuff and to know stuff about themselves. Sometimes it happens both ways. In this case, it happened to me in the middle of this. I said, wait a minute, I've been going out with and marrying people who are addicted to substances or suicidal or abusive, and my own father, which I discussed on the stage, was a sex addict.
Wow.
And my mother was a depressive. And what's going on with me? Whoa. I had a therapist say to me, hey, you know what? You might be codependent. You should look into that. And I had bought a book called Codependency for Dummies, which I didn't really read. And then I did. And then I said, holy shit, I'm codependent to people who are troubled or people who have issues. I'm the kind of person that gets addicted to relationships with people who have issues a lot. So I jumped myself into a 12-step group called CODA, which is a funny thing because in music, CODA means return to the middle or return to the meat of the song and go to the end again. So I actually literally said, all right, I'm jumping into my life, into the middle of my life and go back to where I am today and see what I've done and what am I doing. And I've been in that 12-step group now for 90 days, a little bit more, and it's really changing my life and really opening up all kinds of things. I revised Lady in Black again. I did it in June at first, and then I did it again in September. And in that process, I was able to actually change the ending, be much braver in exposing myself and tell this audience this very story I'm explaining here.
Wow.
And show them the innards.
So art doesn't imitate life so much as art has unveiled it or even enhanced it.
Well, that's what you do when you're an artist. You take off your skin and show everything else.
That's terrific. That is terrific. Much luck with The Lady in Black, which will become The Lady in Red very soon.
Right, the next version of that will be called The Lady in Red, which is the next part of my diaries in my 30s into 40s, and about an illicit love affair I had that sort of changed everything again. So that's what that'll be about, and about passion and sex and exploration. So
again, this episode is not suitable for all ages. And needless to say, Granny's Bloomers returns, as you said, with I'm So High.
Right, the cannabis show.
Can't wait, but I'll leave it at that. We've been speaking about cabaret, and let's talk about someone who speaks about cabaret. Let's talk to David Sabella. David Sabella is the founder and editor-in-chief of Cabaret Hotspot, the latest go-to site to learn all about various cabaret acts around New York. Cabaret has always been there, but I think now it's starting to really have much more of a brighter spotlight. I think it's becoming much more well-known, and the respect that it had in its origin days, I think, is really coming back full force. Let's hear from David Sabella all about that.
Hello there, this is David Sabella.
David Sabella, this is Jay Michaels. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. This call is being recorded for quality assurance.
Right.
I'm glad to have you on the program. Glad to be able to speak to you. It's a pleasure. We have a celebrity with us. We have the creator of the character of Mary Sunshine from the current production of Chicago on Broadway, and now you are taking the cabaret world essentially into your heart. Tell us about David Sabella, and tell us about Cabaret Hotspot.
Thanks so much. It's very kind of you. A little bit about David Sabella. Well, I am. All these things culminate, I think, also in Cabaret Hotspot, so it's a good dovetail. I am, as you know, a lifelong singer for 25 years now. I have been also an educator. I'm a voice teacher. I'm also a dad of two young girls. Currently, a lot of writing in my life, as I've been asked to author a book on singing in cabaret.
I heard you mention that at one of Richard Skipper's programs. That's great. Congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. Yeah. So this year, especially, is filled with a great deal of writing and research in the field, in the world of cabaret. And, you know, I have to admit, I'm not so thrilled with having to write so much. A lot of writing. And so I thought to myself, I need to practice my writing. I need to discipline myself to sit down and write and gather my thoughts around this genre and what I want to say about this genre. Because, you know, as I've been performing for all these years, but when someone asks you to really write something cogent and something worthwhile, you have to really sit and think about it a bit and make sure you're putting forth the right information. So
it's almost like warming up for a song. You can't just stare at a screen and it'll magically appear.
You're really right, Jay. You're exactly right about that. So I was talking with my friend Sue Matsuki, and we were lamenting the passing of Stu Hamstra, had Cabaret Hotline online years ago, and he died last year in 2017, and his website, blog, et cetera, fell into disrepair, just fell inactive along with his passing. And I said to Sue, well, why don't we pick that back up? Why don't we do something to honor Sue's legacy and pick up Cabaret Hotline and continue it? And I began to research the technology that is now available versus what he used to do, because, you know, it started out as a newsletter.
Sure.
And then he used to sit and type everything manually, and he would write a complete schedule of what's happening where and what his day was, and it was a lot. But today the technology is so, so different. And so in late July, we began to put together an online magazine now called Cabaret Hotspot. And so it's a daily listing of all the shows that are happening in all the clubs on our events calendar and our calendar page. You can access every club right from our calendar page. And it's news and reviews and interviews and all sorts of things. And it's helping me sort of gather my thoughts. And I'm writing a lot and really honing my skill for this larger work, which is going to be the book, which is coming out in 2020.
Okay.
Spring of 2020. So my whole world right now is a lot of teaching, as always, and a lot of writing, and a little bit of singing, because I really need to curtail that a little bit so I can put this forth, you know?
It's sort of like a busman's holiday. I find when I have to learn something, I can't pick up a textbook and do that. I have to do it like, you know, hand to hand, if you will, or hands on. Do you find that your writing skills are improving simply by writing reviews, simply by writing editorials? Do you find that your prose are growing as lovely as your voice by doing that?
Thank you so much. I do. I feel that I'm finding my voice in the way that I want to phrase things and the way that I want to put things. And as I'm being very analytical with the entire genre and all these performances that I see, and I'm out 3 or 4 nights a week seeing different things, and I have a team of reviewers now who are out there, 7 people working at Cabaret Hotspot right now. So, and I edit everything. So I'm reading everything else that everyone else is writing, and it's really honing not only my writing skills, but forming what are the questions I want to ask? What's the information that I want to have actually in the book?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are themes with such a large overview of everything going on just in this city, never mind in other cities, but just in this city, there is an overview that one gains about what's happening in the world of cabaret. What are some of the questions that people who don't know the world of cabaret would be interested to know? What are some of the misconceptions about the world of cabaret that people have, et cetera, and how to really bridge the gap between this community of cabaret artists on a national and even international level with the rest of the entertainment world and even the support world. For instance, the book, it's part of the So You Want to Sing series by Roman and Littlefield, and it's sponsored by the National Association of Teachers of Singing.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's going to be geared towards, it's an academic book.
Right.
It's also geared not just to the singers, but to the voice teachers, both in the universities and privately, who teach young singers. And there's such a misconception about what are the skills required in the world of cabaret and what makes a good cabaret performance? What's a good performance of an American songbook song, you know, an American standard? And let's be honest, we've seen fantastic performances where the interpretation comes forward in a way that is naturalistic and beautiful and intimate. And then you see some performances where it's the voice that comes forward and not the interpretation. And the voice teaching community really needs to know that we got to work on the interpretation. It's not all about the pearly tones. It's about what are you going to say? What do you have to say? What is the story of this song? You know? So I think it will be very relevant for the community for which it's intended. Let's say that. Right?
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
You spark a couple of questions in me. The first is, you said misconceptions of cabaret. What is a popular misconception? If I were to say to someone, let's go out and see a cabaret, what might be a negative thing they're going to think?
Burlesque. That someone's going to take off their clothing.
Yeah. Really?
Yes. Yes, that is an overwhelming misconception of what the word cabaret means. I've even had very famous cabaret singers, I won't name them, but 2 or 3 have said to me, oh, the book should not be called that because people will think X, Y, or Z. The book should be called like nightclub singing or something else, right? Because the major artists in this field also acknowledge that this word is a loaded word. It has such a divergent meaning for so many people and can be easily misinterpreted, which is why I love it, because I think now, hopefully with the book, we're going to dispel that misinterpretation.
Pardon me if I sound stupid, but is that simply because of the movie? Because when people go to see Cabaret, the movie, they have a particular image. Is that where it spawns?
Well, could be. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Goodness.
Yes, clad girls and boys in suspenders. Yes, it could be. Who knows?
Wow. The million things that I thought you were going to say, I didn't think that one. Wow, that I just learned something. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
we're talking cabaret. Maybe because I'm involved in it myself, so I don't necessarily think of that as the definitive, but I'm asking you in terms of a more educated opinion. Are we in like a cabaret renaissance? Is it growing as an industry these days?
You know, it's hard to say. I don't know if I would say it's growing as an industry, but I think it's growing as an art form. See a lot of younger people, and I mean young, like in their teens and early 20s, gravitating towards the American Songbook and standard repertoire and the kind of repertoire that has generally found a home, let's say, in traditional cabaret. I see them gravitating towards that and reinterpreting it and rearranging it, and there are newer, younger audiences for that new voice that's emerging. I got to see two great artists recently. One was a duo, twin brothers named Jack Benny. They are Jack and Benny Lipson. But together they're called Jack Benny.
Brilliant.
And one plays piano and the other plays bass, and they write their own songs and perform their own songs, and they are politically minded, and they had a it's really relevant. Like it's a jazzy kind of sound in a relevant political context, and there wasn't anybody in their audience over 28. I'm like, wow, look at that, you know. And then of course the great Hillary Cole, I saw her recently, and she's reinterpreting jazz standards and American Songbook standards in just a thrilling way. It's like a new newer generation way. So I think the art form is growing and including lots of other great singers and songs and new songs that are being written, etc. As far as the business and the industry growing, I don't think that I can answer that, because I think that's up to the club owners and other managers, et cetera, to say what's the business side of it, mm-hmm. you know, what's happening in the business side. But I can attest, I think the art form is really stretching and growing.
That's great. What's that going to do for popular music? You're saying these teenagers are in there singing the American Songbook, and it struck me the pair of twins that you mentioned, Jack Benny. The fact that they even know who Jack Benny is to make that their headline. What's that going to do for popular music? You think you think there'll be a different a resurgence or a style change within popular music these days because of that? What people might be a little more traditional?
I'm gonna answer that with a little historical perspective. As part of the curriculum of what I teach for contemporary commercial music, there's a great teacher, coach, friend of mine named Sherry Sanders, who wrote a book called Rock the Audition. And it's how to audition for, of course, rock musicals and contemporary musicals. And in her book, she outlines the various decades and the major sociological issues of that decade and where we are now and the possibilities of where we are now. For instance, in the 50s and 60s, and you have shows like Hairspray and Jersey. Is it Jersey? No. Jersey Boys. Well,
Jersey Boys, 60s, I guess.
Yeah. So those shows on Broadway that use that type of music, and they're telling a story that the central theme of that era was civil rights. And so if you take a song like, "Oh, Wait a Minute, Mr. Postman," and you're going to audition for Hairspray with that song, well, what if the person that you're waiting to get the letter from was of a different race? What, doesn't that change the way you perform that song? Doesn't that add a color to what was going on in the 50s and 60s to all of the repertoire that was written at that time?
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 70s, with the emergence of disco, we had, everything's a big party. And of course, that can be viewed as a reaction to the Vietnam War. and people wanting to forget the strife of the 60s. And then you have, in addition to the late 60s, you have like the Joan Baez of the world, and you have folk music and anti-war protest music coming up. And then you have disco, which everybody wants to have a big party. And then the 80s come along, and you have yet another thing that happened to another generation of men, and that was the AIDS epidemic. And so now you notice in the 80s, there's this emergence of what they call the power ballad, which has increasing modulations, trying to sort of break through a ceiling. And that can be a reflection of what was going on in that era. And then in the 90s was a great resurgence or surgence of girl groups, female girl groups, right? So there's a lot of women's lib and what we sometimes affectionately call like the angry girl groups, like the Alanis Morissette, right? And,
right.
You know, they have this message and they're very assertive. And then the aughts, the 2000s, mm-hmm. have been a little bit of bubblegum. We've gone back to a little playful, almost like the 70s, want to forget about some things. And so you have the Ariana Grandes of the world, and you have this sort of superficial pop thing going on right now. But I bet, and this is the answer to your question, not just because of Jack Benny and these other younger people singing standards, I bet right now because of the political time that we're in, the music you're going to see emerge out of this is going to be more like the anti-war protests and the folk music of this late 60s. That's what I think we're going to see soon.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So that was my long answer to that.
Oh, my goodness. But what a thorough one. That's excellent. Speaking of young people, your children, are they singers?
My older child, who's 15, is a singer. She grew up listening to me give all the lessons here in the house. So, and she used to give her dolls voice lessons. And so, literally, she used to give her dolls voice lessons at like age 4, you know. And so she's got a very good voice. And then my younger one wants nothing to do with it at all.
Brilliant.
Absolutely nothing to do with it at all.
Brilliant.
So that's fine.
Wow, that's great. That's great. David, thank you so much. Give us one soundbite, one thing that we won't see in a press release about Cabaret Hotspot. What's some secret that no one's going to see when they log on or look at the various things there?
A secret.
Or something we don't know. I always say, what's not in the press release?
It's a hell of a lot more work than I thought it would be. it's a fast-paced thing to try to keep up with. It really is. And so reviews take a few days or a week to come out. It's because we have so many of them to do. It's an exciting, really exciting genre here in the city and across the country. And I'm thrilled to try to keep up with it, let me tell you.
Well, then, if there isn't a cabaret renaissance, then you and your site are definitely going to make one. Thank you so much for this information. I don't think this was an interview. I think I just had a masterclass. So okay. Thank you so much for all of this. All the best with everything. I look forward to following everything on Cabaret Hotspot, and here's to the future of your book as well.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you soon. And in the turn of the year, we're actually going to offer some live and online classes, because Cabaret Hotspot, first and foremost, is an educational website. So we're going to offer some classes in support of the cabaret performer.
Then count on me to spread the word on that, because I'm all for education. That's great. Thank you so much. I will talk to you soon. Ciao.
Okay. Take care.
Bye. I love cabaret. I've loved it for many years, and it's a pleasure to talk to both Mary and David about it. Well, that's it for now, ladies and gentlemen. CabaretHotspot.com. That's CabaretHotspot.com. One word. Is there to give you great singers in great clubs around the great NYC. Log on to it and see a show. That's it for now. This is Jay Michaels.
And Mary McCarry.
And if you got a couple of 20s burning a hole in your pocket, you can see a show or a great singer as well. Talk to you soon.
Bye.